Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life for IBD patients. For more information, call 1-800-492-5538. I'm joined in studio, of course, by my partner,
Anthony McCarthy. Great to be here, Mark. Very, very interesting conversation about that state of the city, which just dovetails so nicely into our next conversation.
Of course, Anthony is host of the Anthony McCarthy Show every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. and senior media fellow at our Center for Emerging Media. We're also joined in studio at this moment by the Reverend Heber Brown. Pastor Brown is pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore on Belvedere Avenue, right next to Cafe Zen and next to the Zen West, two of my favorite places.
That's it. Mine too. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. And in a moment, we'll be joined on the phone by Don Fry, who is chairman of the Maryland Video Lottery Facilities Location Commission and president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee. And we want you all to join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or log on to my Facebook, Mark Steiner, or Anthony McCarthy's Facebook page.
Which is Anthony W. McCarthy.
Anthony W. McCarthy.
W.
Yes.
Or if you hunt me down, you'll probably find me regardless.
Well, that's why I didn't get my email this morning because I didn't write the W.
The W, that's right.
I got it there now.
But you got it to me anyway.
I got it. It's there. So, and write to one of our pages and let us know what you think about gambling. I wrote in my page, what do you think of the state or city-sanctioned gambling? Gambling interests always tell us that revenues go to education or something that we love, but where do they really go? Opponents are always saying no to any legalized gambling, but haven't we always had gambling in our species as part of our species? First, it was just slots. Now they want casinos. Thoughts? What do you think about where we should go with gambling and what it means for the bottom line of our economy, bottom line of our city and state budgets? Does it help or hinder? And how far will it expand? 410-319-8888. I understand, Don Fry. You're with us now?
I'm with you now.
Good to hear your voice, Don.
Okay, Mark.
And the other guest with us is Heber Brown, pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore. And, of course, Anthony McCarthy. 410-319-8888. So let's talk about this. I mean, we're seeing our mayor, though she didn't mention it, I don't think, in her State of the City speech. But she's been very clear in her other conversations and said it on this program, as a matter of fact, after she was sworn in, that she supports the idea of casinos, or casino gambling, I should say, in Baltimore. And we see Delaware and Pennsylvania, West Virginia, have moved from slots to casinos. And these debates we've had in this program before, the anti-slots groups have said, look, as soon as we get slots, casinos is the next discussion. And, of course, State Senate President Mike Miller wants to see casinos. So let's talk about the role this plays in our society and in our local government and why it makes sense or doesn't make sense. And let me start with Don Fry since you're on the phone, Don.
Well, Mark, I mean, my role right now is to serve as the chair of the Maryland Video Lottery Facility Location Commission, which is the commission that is charged with implementing the law that the legislature passed back during the November 2007 special session when they were addressing a number of issues, but particularly dealing with the long-term budget deficits of the state of Maryland, the structural deficits of the state of Maryland. And part of the solution to that was the introduction of video lotteries or slots in the state of Maryland. Of course, then that was approved ultimately by the voters in November 2008, and we've been trying to implement it since that time. And as of today, we still do not have any slots operations because of the structure by which the legislation enacted the law and the process that it takes to get slots created.
Well, before we bring Pastor Brown into this conversation, let me ask you this, Mr. Fry. Are we jumping ahead in this? Not you, but the legislature and our mayor and others who really are engaging the public on expanded gaming in these localities, when in fact, as you just pointed out, we haven't gotten the first cog in this wheel going yet. But a lot of people, one of the state senators from here in the city, a lot of people around the state talking about moving past slots fairly quickly because we need the revenue.
Well, I don't necessarily know that we're jumping ahead of the game. A lot of people felt that there was a need for full casino gaming from the very onset, but that's not what they thought was politically feasible at mm-hmm. the time. And when they created the law or passed the law, they had certain expectations as to the competition that they were facing at that time and the amount of revenue that introducing slots into Maryland would create. Since the time that the law was passed, we now are more than 2 years, not quite 2.5 years since they passed it, although the voters had to wait for a year to give it their approval of it. The world of gaming around Maryland from a competitive status has changed considerably. Delaware now has some form of sports gaming. They also have now enacted some table games. Pennsylvania doing the same thing. West Virginia has done the same thing. And part of that is because of the additional competition of Maryland and other states getting involved, but also because, obviously, the fiscal challenges that all the state governments are facing at the same time. So I don't necessarily think it's premature to jump that far, because this is part of what they have based their structural deficit solution on. And Maryland is even further complicated than other states in the fact, because we made this part of our state constitution, it's going to have to be on the ballot for it to change at some time, if it ever changes. And obviously that only happens every 2 years.
Reverend Heber Brown, then we're going to open the phones. Joel and Lily are the first two callers up, and we'll read things on Facebook as well. Joel and Lily, please stay with us, but let's turn to Heber and see where he wants to take this.
Well, I certainly, as Mark was leading up to this, was talking about the anti-slots community, and I was a part of that, trying to get people to think about what many of us believe would be a slippery slope. And as you said, exactly what was warned is exactly what is happening. And I have to agree with Anthony on this about jumping forward when, we've not even seen a dime of greater revenue or investment in that city. And this whole expanding of gaming in Maryland helps to perpetuate the perception amongst many community members that, our state is more than willing to pour more money into downtown and big-time investments, but not as anxious to support local communities and neighborhoods. And so I'll just continue to keep on blowing the horn on this issue, because what we're not talking about, as Anthony, as you said at the beginning, we're not talking about education anymore. I mean, they said education. I wish I would have brought in. I had some of the those flyers that they mailed to all of our houses about how, education is going to be better and horse racing, et cetera, et cetera. But you notice that we're not talking about education anymore, and we're talking about expanding already, and nobody is saying anything about, where would this new revenue go in support of our local communities?
Well, the revenue structure in the event of this would change. And let me preface my comments by saying that our commission, despite some media reports, have not specifically recommended that we move to table games. But we have said that that's something that the legislature, because they're the policymakers, we're more the implementers, should at least look at from the public policy perspective, since that's what their role is. But in the event that table games were to come about, that does not necessarily mean that any of the formulas would change, and that the percentage of money, which is in excess of 50% of the net proceeds that does go to an educational trust fund, likely would remain going to an educational trust fund.
Let me open the phone so that our listeners join us. I'm sitting here with Anthony McCarthy, of course, my co-host on every Monday here, host Anthony McCarthy Show. We're joined by phone. We heard just Don Fry, who's president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee, and he's chairman of the Maryland Video Lottery Facility Locations Commission, the man charged with getting the thing set up and done in the state of Maryland, and Heber Brown, who is pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church. You can log on to the Mark Steiner Show Facebook or the Anthony W. McCarthy Facebook page, and we have some people's comments there we're going to read that could lead us into some interesting pieces of our discussion here. But let's go to the phones first at 410-319-8888. And Joel in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Fellas, how are you?
Well, hey, welcome, Joel.
All right. I've just got on about a month ago with this show, coming from home, and it's very interesting, beginning with the whole controversy with Mayor Dixon. But anyway, the one thing I wanted to say was it's interesting how we are jumping, and what I mean that is the state legislation, from one thing to another. I've always said, okay, why don't you liquidate your assets? I see that Baltimore City alone, I'm not even going to talk about the state, forget about the federal government, but Baltimore City alone has so many properties that they have under their control that really, whether it's office buildings, whether it's housing, I mean, these are things that basically I believe we can use this if we can liquidate it and get it out to the general public and to the investors, that this will reduce some of the deficit and not have to push the gambling and the slots, whatever you want to call it, to the high degree. Another thing is what I call, just for name purposes only, is called the John Hopkins method. They have housing for their physicians and for their residents. Why not have that instead of paying on some of the budget as far as to the salaries? Why don't you give a house, a fixer-upper, to the actual employees of Baltimore City? I think it would make sense. You keep your money in your pocket instead of keep going into the debt. Even with the educational piece, why don't you reinvest it into the community instead of bringing outsiders in?
Joel, let me let our guest comment on that. Don, you want to start on that? Because I mean, you've been involved in housing and more, so let me hear your thoughts.
Well, I certainly think that we've seen success and similar to that in the city years ago with some of the homestead laws that were done in Maryland, in Baltimore City, and with Otterbein and things of that nature. Of course, that was a different type of program that exists now, but I certainly think that there's merit to look at the concept of the fact that the city does have a significant number of houses and housing opportunities that perhaps could be made available to workers in the city and things of that nature. As far as reducing the debt by eliminating or selling off some of the property, that is a one-time event. That is money that comes in one time through the sale. And that certainly does help out, but it doesn't help out the long-term structural deficit that the state's dealing with. And, of course, I'm not here to defend the state and its spending and their spend in its budget, although I dealt with that when I was a member of the legislature. But I certainly think, obviously, that excess properties are something that government should not be holding, and they should, if they don't have a good purpose for having it, they should liquidate it. But, again, I'm not so sure that addresses the structural challenge that the state and the city even face.
Unless, Heber, you want to jump in on this, I'm going to open the phones again to the caller. 410-319-8888. A lot of people are calling in. I want to get them in on this conversation. Lily, you're on the air. Hi, Lily, you're on the air. Want to turn on your radio, please?
Lily?
Lily, you there? Lily?
She just hung up.
410-319-8888. Let's go to Reverend Perkins. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening,
guys. Hi, Reverend Perkins.
How you doing? Heber, how are you?
I'm well, Pastor. How are you, sir?
I'm counting my blessings. Listen, I just wanted to call in. I'm calling from a cell phone, and hopefully the signal will last. I was a voice against slot machine gambling. One of the things that we learned back in the day before gambling became legal, the same people who built Las Vegas, the same people who built Atlantic City, wants to set up shop, will set up shop in the state of Maryland. From day one, listen to me very carefully, from day one, they had every intention of building regular casino-style gambling, not just slots, but the table games and everything that comes with it. They're even looking at riverboat gambling because Baltimore City is prime real estate for the gambling industry. And, I don't want to, sound negative, but what we feared will possibly happen once it comes, it's going to spread like a malignant tumor.
Okay, well, Reverend, let's wrestle with what you're just saying here. I want everybody in this panel to talk about this, and our listeners calling in as well at 410-319-8888. Annette, you have an interesting thought. I'm going to come to your question next. But let me tag on to what Robert wrote in on Facebook. Upshot, okay? He wrote, let me move this over here. If not abused, gambling is a form of entertainment and relaxation. People like the thrill of winning. Regulated gambling, in theory, protects the consumers and communities from unscrupulous casinos. bookies, etc. States surrounding Maryland have developed successful casino operations that attract Maryland dollars. Why should interested Marylanders be compelled to travel out of state for this form of entertainment? And why should Maryland want its citizens' money to spend its money in West Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, etc., where it could be spent right here? Now, so the question I'm asking here is, people are going to gamble. Gambling is part of the human mind. I've visited a culture on this planet where we're talking about people who live isolated from what we call the civilized world to what we call the civilized world, who don't know some love another love to gamble. It's part of the condition. So the question is, let me start with you, Heber Brown, since I know you oppose this. So if that's the case, then what's wrong with highly regulated gambling to bring revenues into a state government or a local government?
Well, I think on a number of fronts there's problems with it. I mean, I think if you read the fiscal note and leading up to that November, I think it was 08 legislation about the slots, they even put in the legislation some quote-unquote protections because they know in advance that there will be people who, I think the Facebook person said, if not abused. Well, we know it's going to be some abuse. And many times it's the pastors like Pastor Perkins and so many others who are the first line of support for those who knock on the door when life is in shambles and marriages are ruined, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one thing. Number two, I think it's an old idea, Mark, to be very honest with you. If we're trying to be a forward-looking, progressive state and get ahead of the curve as to where we're going, and that's what a part of Mr. Fry's job is. His job is to look forward as to where we're going in society and try to make some recommendations. This is an old idea. Look at Detroit. Detroit has invited in casinos, trying to compete with its partners across the lake and in Detroit, they brought in a whole bunch of casinos, and how has it worked out for them? For them, they have, I've seen estimates, low 20% unemployment, I've seen as high as 28% unemployment in Detroit with all of these casinos that are in Detroit right now. And so one of the arguments that people who are pushing slots say, they say jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, in Detroit, there's people who are out of jobs and looking for, and crime is still an issue. Mr. Fry had a commentary about where's the outrage over crime. Well, if you want to see some crime, come on, keep on inviting and opening and widening this door, and you're going to see some impact on local neighborhoods. Mr. Fry represents the business community, and I know he's just an implementer, as he said, but those on his side of the issue represent the business community. My interest is the communities. I am in the community. I'm with the neighborhoods. And on the side of the neighborhoods, this is not something that's progressive, life-giving, or holistic for communities.
Don, no, and over to Anthony. Don?
Well, I think, as far as this being an old idea, the reality is that this is something that's going throughout all the states and many states. I think as many as 11 states in the last 2 years or so have implemented additional gaming. And they've done so for a number of reasons. One is, just as you indicated, Mark, and as your caller had mentioned, I guess, on the Facebook page, is that people are seeing millions and hundreds of millions of dollars leaving their state, going to other states that are propping up other states' budgets, providing schools in other states, paying for social services in other states, because if you just drive to Delaware or you drive to Pennsylvania, if you drive to West Virginia and go through the parking lots, you will see an abundance of Maryland license plates in those parking lots. People are going to go to these types of facilities. And many people have said, why don't we want those dollars to stay in the state of Maryland so that we can use those dollars as revenues that come in?
Anthony,
it's very difficult to get the state to deal with, and it's a great concept to see if the state move progressively and not have to deal with gaming, except the political realities are such that you just cannot raise the type of revenues and keep the money in the state absent something like this. But and I think that the legislature did recognize and did consider the social issues. They've also looked at the compulsive gambling situation, provided some funding for those types of problems. That's similar to what they've done with the state lottery as well.
Now, two folks have written in on my Facebook page, Bob Strupp, Don Davis, and these two particular statements from Algerie Stallings. Very interesting, Mark. She says, well, I guess if we had the slots, it would stop people, just as Don Fry said, from going to Nevada, West Virginia, New Jersey, and other states, taking badly needed revenue for the state of Maryland out of our states. People are going to do what they're going to do, Pastor. I think she's talking to you, Pastor Brown. Regardless and in spite of the slippery slope of the moral decay in our society that so many ministers in our area often address when it comes to this issue. She said, in Anne Arundel County, people are hemming and hawing about not wanting slots around Arundel Mills Mall, saying that it's a family environment. She said, have you been to the mall? What kind of family environment is that? And then Benjamin Collins said, unfortunately, even with all of the infusion of crime and other issues that people are talking about, the city and the state are in dire need of revenue, and that this is one way to generate those revenues.
Let me get to the phones here, then we'll come back and let the Reverend Brown and Don Fry respond. 410-319-8888. Annette, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to ask the Reverend. Now, the Protestant leadership seems united against this, but is there any scriptural or biblical reference for this opposition?
Well, there is strong biblical pattern and motif and message in the sense that we have a mandate as not just reverends or preachers or whoever, but just believers. The gospel gives us a mandate to be ultimately concerned with what the Bible calls the least of these, those who are oftentimes pushed to the sidelines and the margins of society and taken advantage of by the power structure. Can I tell you there's a scripture that says, don't go to table gaming? No, but I can tell you that Jesus says multiple times and in many different ways that unless you are concerned about your neighbor, it's impossible to really line up with the will of God on earth. And so I would say that. And the other thing I would say, too, as Mr. Fry alluded to in his opening comments, he said that other states, Delaware and such, have expanded their initial plan to keep up, in a sense, to keep up with the Joneses. And you have to kind of keep on this competitive hamster wheel of expanding. I would ask Mr. Fry, where does it stop for us? You admitted live on air that from the very beginning, the plan was by some that they were going to expand anyway. And for us, where will that buck stop? If you want to get into this rat race or this hamster wheel, then we have to be competitive with other states. So we have to allow smoking because other places allow smoking. Discounted food is at other places, and so that means in Maryland we'd have to look at discounted food, and the wheel will just keep on turning. And, you know, left to its own devices, neighborhoods are really going to be the losers in all of this.
Pastor, first of all, let me say I didn't indicate from the very beginning that some people – that this is what the companies were coming in here to do. What I suggested to you was that many people in the state of Maryland who have advocated for some form of gaming said from the very onset that we ought to be having table games and not just slots for a number of different reasons, and that was part of the debate that the legislature even considered at one time or another. Again, the legislature, we have to also recognize that legislation passed and the voters voted on it, and quite honestly, it's now in our state constitution, for better or for worse, that Maryland is going to have gaming as far as video lottery terminals, as many as 15,000 machines in the state of Maryland. So that issue is sort of behind us. Now the question is really confronting, I think, our leaders are, we have a situation where part of the reason for doing so was to raise sufficient funds for education purposes, somewhat dealing with the horse racing industry, some in minority contracting, some for local governments that are going to have these local impacts.
Don, I have to interrupt you. We have to take a very, very short break. I'll let you, because we have to take a station ID break. But hold on with this. We're going to come back to let you finish that thought. We're also going to let you come back. I'm going to let you know that Danny in Missouri, the state of Missouri, you will be the first caller since you're calling from so far away. Then we'll go to Lily and Lance and the other callers as well. He wants to talk about the Missouri experience with slots and gambling. We'll hear about that. So stay with us. We're going to come right back here for the Mark Steiner Show. And I'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and Anthony McCarthy and I are here with the Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore, and Don Fry, who is president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee and serves as chairman of the Maryland Video Lottery Facility Location Commission, whose job it is to get those locations up and running and moving in the state of Maryland that we passed, remember, folks.
That's right.
In a referendum. The question is, where do we want it to go? Do we want it to expand to casinos, which seems to be the discussion taking place now? And also the latest legislation in Annapolis is to allow slots operators to be invested in more than one slots arena in the state of Maryland. 410-319-8888. But Donna, I should let you finish your thought very quickly, then we'll go to our phones.
That's okay, Mark. I think the purpose I was saying is that when the state passed this and the voters approved it, there were certain expectations from a financial status. And I think that, I think it's part of the reason that the legislators are at least discussing this issue is they're looking to live up to those expectations, and the competition has changed. But love to hear from your other caller from Missouri or other locations.
Here we go. 410-319-8888. Danny in the state of Missouri, you're on the air.
Hi, I just want you to know that the gambling in the state of Missouri has been a joke and a disaster.
How so?
Allegedly supposed to help the schools. Missouri is still 38 out of 50 states. I don't know where the money's gone, but it certainly hasn't gone to the schools, and it certainly hasn't gone to the roads. We're 50 out of 50. We have the worst roads, and we have some of the worst schools in the country. Our teachers are some of the worst paid. They have to supply their own supplies for the kindergarten and first grade. They have to bring in their own snacks and supplies for their students. And the bankruptcy rate hiked up about 40% within the first couple of years, and the need for social services expanded significantly without any commensurate evidence of money going to meet those needs. Yes. But it certainly has not gone for the schools, as it was allegedly intended to do.
So what have Missouri journalists and others been writing and saying about why that's taken place and where the money has gone?
Well, I really don't know. It's been kind of a shell game.
Uh-huh.
To start off with, the Missouri voters initially had said, no, we weren't going to have the gambling votes. And the next thing I knew, they were building them, and we hadn't done another referendum. So, I mean, you got to remember, we're the state that elected a man who had died to the Senate. So we're not exactly particularly well-known for our appropriate ethics.
I thought you all were the show-me state, though, right?
Well, I'd like them to show me where the money's gone, because it's sure not showing up.
Well, Danny, I appreciate you listening to us, and I actually will spend some time looking at that through the press and see what they're saying about what happened in Missouri. And I really do appreciate you listening online and joining us here.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, that's interesting. I mean, so do we have safeguards in place here to ensure? Because I remember when it was never really part of the law, but we were always told when we had lotteries, when lotteries first
came,
was going to go to education. That's where the money was going. And what you see in lotteries is a lot of poor people lining up to play the lottery.
Yeah,
but the money is going mostly to the general fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have people. I mean, as a minister, I get a different perspective because I have pastor some people and a connection with some people who are in some of those lottery lines, and who are having some financial difficulty because of that that behavior. And so we don't have those protections. I think we really need to do. I'm so glad. What's his name? Danny. I'm so glad that Danny called in from Missouri, because it gives us opportunity to not only look at Missouri, but these other states as well that have been raised. And let's do a kind of a people's history of casinos across the nation. And, as we can see, education is popular. You pull up education and people say, oh, yeah, education. But at the end of the day, the question is, does it really support education? Can you name me one state where education has improved and schools have expanded because of slots and casinos?
But, Don, in the state of Maryland, the legislature went to great lengths, though, to ensure that the dollars, when they are allocated, go by law to these entities, correct?
Correct. There's a specific, and this is what differs from the debate back in 1973 with respect to the enactment of the state lottery in Maryland. Yes, it was, people were, the education was talked about then, but the monies were always intended from the state lottery to go to the general fund. The general fund does pay for the education system in the state of Maryland. That's where the education funding comes from. What is different in this situation dealing with the video lotteries terminals is that the law very specifies exactly where every single dollar of the net proceeds goes, and more than 50% of it in state law goes to the Educational Trust Fund for K through 12 education. That was not the situation back on the state lottery.
Let's go back to the phones and have our thoughts here from our listeners. 410-319-8888. And Lily, you're back. You're on the air. Lily, you there? Lily? Got to turn down your radio. You can join us if you're there.
Thank you. Sorry I hit the wrong button.
That's all right, love. You're with us.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that the other person called and said their state is not doing as well as they claim, because we've heard it before that if we, you know, increase our lottery plan, because we have gone from three digits to five to six to bonus balls, and still the education system in Baltimore City is suffering, and I guess the systems all over the state. But I like to say, too, to the statement, gaming is entertainment or gambling is entertainment. Could you really tell that to someone who's lost all the money, that it was entertainment? I think that we have a problem with not understanding some basics. Some things change and some things remain the same. Gambling is gambling. I quickly learned when I was young, the only person that really benefits is the person who's hosting the game. There are going to be few people to walk away with money. And in a city where we have unemployment and people are not, at this point, able to find jobs, they go into that pipe dream. I'm going to get some money. I'm going to gamble. I just don't see it as we can believe what the state says about gambling. Oh, this time they're writing it there. But something happened, and we still won't see the money. I think it's a bad idea. Gambling doesn't put anybody on top but the house man, the person who hosts the game. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Though, I'd like to get just for a second, before we go back to the phones, then, the three of you kind of comment on this and start with Don and Heber. As Don, as you keep saying, it's a fact of life. We passed that bill. So, I mean, it's there. And we can't, I think in that bill it says, in the referendum, in the amendment, you can't have casino gambling unless it goes back to referendum. Is that correct?
That's correct. The law very clearly says in the referendum that we passed three key components. One is that there's a maximum of 15,000 video lottery terminals. Secondly, five locations in the state of Maryland. And third, that is subject to local zoning and land use provisions. So unless you go back and amend the Constitution, which, again, every voter will have a chance to vote on, you could not expand it to table games or add additional locations throughout the state of Maryland.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And we have Alyssa who wrote in. Then we'll go back to the phones. Alyssa wrote in, I'm sorry, too many things going on here at one time. There we go. that she said, legalize and tax. Illegal equals unregulated. True of brew, cigarettes, gambling, lust, drugs, most of man's sins. I say legalize and tax them all.
That may be difficult in the state of Maryland.
She has a point. People,
of course.
410-319-8888. Otherwise, we put people in jail for things that they're going to do anyway. 410-319-8888. Lance, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Well, welcome.
I was the science behind it. That there's a chemical stimuli in your brain called dopamine that it stimulates you with the anticipation of winning. It's akin to like a drug addiction, and I think it's predatory. I think the science behind it, these people that want to promote this thing, it's decadent. It leads to all the ills that mankind faces. And we know this, and it makes me have a lack of confidence in the politicians and the leadership when this is the only way that they can come up with to generate revenue to, you know, to make the, keep the society going.
But I mean, does it lead to those ills that you just outlined, or does it lead to choices about those ills?
Well, most people who have drug problems, they would like to get out of it, mm-hmm. you know, and this the science behind the chemical stimuli called dopamine that's in your brain you know, I faced it myself with scratch-offs. You know, why am I buying these things? You know, and it takes willpower. And there are a lot of people out there who are going to destroy their lives and have problems in family life because they won't be able to control it. It's predatory.
All right, there's many things like that in our life, and I suppose before we go back to the phones here, I mean, let's talk a bit about one of the issues you just raised, which is the fact is we have an economic crisis in Baltimore, the state of Maryland, the United States of America, and the question becomes, where do states and localities get their revenues? I mean, gambling clearly, many people would argue that gambling is an expansion of gambling. Would add to the bottom line of our state coffers, and that if you can't come up with another way of doing it, then why are we complaining about gambling? A and B. Some people would argue, as have argued here on Facebook, is that you know, when we have just slots, working class people, old people, and poor people play slots in lottery. Rich people, people of means, upper middle class people go to casinos. And spend their money. Though the majority of people, money coming from gambling, comes from slots and lottery because poor people are more desperate, and so they play those games. So on the one hand, yes, we are kind of leaning on poor folks. On the other hand, people are saying, where is the money going to come from if it doesn't come from gambling and slots? Which is one of the reasons I think that you see Mayor Stephen Williams Blake saying we need to have casino gambling in Baltimore. I'll let Heber go first, then we'll go over to Don Fry.
Well, let me say that I have to agree with one of the earlier callers who said it's predatory. It is predatory. I mean, everybody knows that. Even the state legislature knows it's predatory. That's why they put provisions in the legislation that try to address that. But it's also a regressive tax on the poor, as you said, kind of alluded to, Mark, talking about how slots and lottery prey on people who are in the worst position to even be engaged in this type of behavior. And I think when you talk about expanded gambling and table games and casinos will expand the bottom line for the coffers, then we also have to be realistic about how it will expand the social maladies that will come along with it. You can't have more money and less problems. Can I give a little hip-hop to you? The notorious B.I.G. would say, more money, more problems. And so we got to be real about that and say, if you want to expand gambling, sure, okay, go ahead. Go and get the buck. But know that when you get that buck, you're also going to be inviting in some social maladies into neighborhoods and communities. And that's why in this article February 21 in the Baltimore Sun by Andy Linsky, purveyor of slots jockeying to cash in, it talks about in the whole article all this money being thrown around, and the last sentence of the whole article talks about neighborhood groups that are on the other side. This is not about neighborhoods and residents being improved. This is about big corporations getting a lot of money at the expense of the poor and those who are in the least position to stand up to this.
Don?
Well, again, the issue has been, and part of what brought all of this about for many years, and Maryland's been debating this issue since 1995 or 1996 when the first bill was put in regarding slot machines and using it toward funding education, is the fact that we have not been able to come up with resources sufficient to address all of the needs and to address all the budget challenges. And that gaming is a piece of that. Now, obviously, I don't think there's any question that people will say that there's obviously some downside with respect to the gaming, and the pastor has mentioned some of that. But those are all factors that the legislature took into consideration, and were well known for the voters to take into consideration when this matter was decided in November 2008.
What about, before we go to the phone, I understand Aaron Meisner has called in. We'll let him have a say here in just a moment. And identify him not just as Aaron, let people know who's coming, because you know who Aaron Meisner is one of the leading foes of gambling in the state of Maryland. But what do we think about Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake's proposal? The intention of pushing casino gambling in the harbor, in Baltimore in general. I mean, what do we think of that idea? Don, what do you think of that idea?
Well, I'm not sure that I heard the portion about in the harbor.
No, I should not say that. That was an assumption. Let me take that backwards and just say casino gambling. I apologize.
Yeah. Again, I think what has spurred this on, a lot of this discussion, is the fact of the competition in the other states and the changing character of gaming in other states, and people who see the need for the state to be to have a system that's competitive to be looking at that. Obviously, I think that that's going to be subject of a lot of debate. I don't think anything, I'd be surprised if anything happens this legislative session on that issue. And I think that but it is something that the state has to at least examine the concept to see what it means, because you know, many people are going to say, well, if you don't move to gaming, to expanded gaming, and we just have slots, and we end up having a lot less competitiveness in this state, it's not going to accomplish what the voters were hoping to have done when they put it on the ballot.
Open the phones, unless you want to come back, Abra?
Well, yeah, I just would say my view on it with Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake kind of pushing this and supporting this, that I don't think I think she was very quickly brought into the room out of public eye and told that this was the idea that was pushing. I received also a Facebook message from a state senator from Baltimore City pushing and trying to push out the idea as well and trying to just plant the seed over her Facebook page. And so I began to get inundated with, you know, these messages from all different directions, and I think that our new mayor just got the memo that it's time for her to start talking about it. I really don't think it's a good idea. In a city that struggles with addiction of all kinds, I don't think it's a good idea to bring another vice into the city to address it. I mean, to engage that addiction.
410-319-8888. Aaron, you're on the air, and it's Aaron Meisner, right?
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Mm-hmm. First, I just want to make a quick clarification, and then I'd like to make a broader point. You know, it's unfortunate to have to re-clarify all of these mistruths that were put forth during the referendum. There is no guarantee that this money goes towards education because there's no mandatory baseline for education spending. So every dollar that goes into this so-called education trust fund can be backed out of the education budget in Annapolis. So when people make this argument that this is money for education, that's completely false. This is more money just being moved around. It's a shell game in Annapolis. So that's the clarification. The larger point that I'd like to make is that about a week and a half ago, I don't know how it was over by your place, but I had about 4+ feet of snow on the street in front of my house. The city was paralyzed. Kids couldn't go to school. Parents couldn't go to work. Emergency vehicles couldn't pass the streets. And somehow our mayor and other elected officials found time, rather than shoveling snow, to be carrying water for the gambling industry. And my question here is this the best you got? You know, what happened to the idea of attracting businesses? You know, why aren't we letting Black & Decker be taken over by Stanley Works out of Connecticut, a smaller company? We should be, on the acquiring end, we should be bringing real businesses, real jobs, real economic growth, not this shell game nonsense. Okay, we need to really get back to brass tacks, do the real work, and stop, you know, putting everything else on the back burner so that we can fool around with really what's just a budgetary gimmick, and everybody knows that. So why don't we get back to brass tacks in Baltimore?
Don, let me let you tackle that one, if I might.
I think Aaron is correct. It is important that we do have strong economic development. We do want to attract jobs. We do want to have more businesses come to the state of Maryland and to Baltimore, and there's a lot of reasons, a lot of steps that need to be done to make that happen in a lot of ways. Obviously, this is a tough economic times for that to occur. The city was making progress prior to the recession. I think that the city now needs to make sure that it's in a position and poised to do so. Those are all parts of economic development strategy as we move forward.
Heber?
Anthony? But if it's a tough time to do, if it's a tough time to do what Mr. Meisner just suggested, as far as trying to attract businesses and Fortune 500 companies to Baltimore City, if it's a tough time to do that, why is it the right time to expand casinos and table games in Baltimore? How is it that, you know, we seem to have not only political will, but also we find money for whether it be punitive or predatory initiatives, we find money for that, but for the things that we know we need to be doing, it's a challenge, and we have to say we have to wait for a better season.
Well, let me ask the three of you this question, I mean this sincerely. I mean, if we reached a point in society, in American, the economics of our society, that's where we are. That we are the America's back is up against the wall, locality's backs are up against the wall, and taking all the moralistic arguments out of it, that this is where we find ourselves. That the high risk investments that got us into this economic crisis to begin with, we're talking about in some ways a high risk investment in gambling. And where majority of the money goes not to the state of Maryland or citizens, but out to people who own the casinos or own the slot parlors, and that's where we just are. That we are in a position where we have few choices But to do that, if we're going to find revenues to keep the ship of state, city or state, ship of state, afloat, are we there? Is that what's happening here? There's no way to stop Black & Decker from being bought out by a company in another state or another country. We don't have the power to do that, or do we?
Well, I think, Mark, that the argument is being made by that state senator that Pastor Brown was talking about and others who are really on a small crusade that is picking up steam, that we do find ourselves exactly where you just outlined, that we are two things, risk and competition, that we have to take a risk on this gaming because we know it will generate I don't want to say prospective revenue, but there is an idea of how much revenue we can count on once this gets going. The other thing is that we have to be competitive in not only generating revenue for ourselves, but if we're going to have gaming, we must compete against other gaming interests in other states. And so, I mean, that's the practical reality, taking the moralistic arguments, as you said, off the table. But when you put them back in, then it does become problematic because there are a lot of communities that can be argued will be disproportionately impacted if we expand gaming in the city of Baltimore.
If greed, and think of talking about the American ethos that you described, Mark, if greed and high risk got us in this mess, right, how will greed and high risk get us out of it? I mean, if that's the thing that dug us in this hole, tell me who in their right mind will say, well, all we need is to dig a little deeper and we'll be out of this hole. This is not the way to go. We have to go in a new direction, and I'm excited not by the political leaders and the business leaders who are putting out ideas and position papers, which they've been doing for decades, but I'm excited about how communities are coming together to discover and to look at how they can be now in the midst of all these social structures falling to pieces, in the midst of the corporate greed that has gone on to this point. I'm excited about how communities are looking at cooperatives now and saying, you know what, now it's time for us to come together and start our own businesses for our own communities. I'm excited about mutual aid groups like common security clubs that are saying, well, if the banks won't lend us money, let's pay each other out of debt. People are, everyday folks are now in the midst of the rubble of the greed and the high risk that has got us here, are now saying, let's think about some new and fresh and exciting ways to go, green jobs, et cetera, et cetera.
Don, and then I'm going to get a couple calls in here before we have to end this discussion.
Well, Mark, I think certainly what you suggested is a component to this, and that is the fact that something that would be the topic of a much broader discussion that you'd have on your show, and the fact is that we have not seen the political will in the state of Maryland or nationally for our legislative leaders and our elected officials to make some difficult decisions that need to be made that people feel that should seriously be discussed. We don't do things like invest in infrastructure for improvements for our future. And I think that, you know, that's part of the component to what leads us to the fact that we need these additional revenues and the fact that we have other states who are taking the money away when it's right here in our own backyard.
Let me get a call in here before we have to end this discussion. We're about to have a discussion with the Nobel Prize-winning economist, Joseph Stiglitz, about stimulus and the American economy and your jobs in our future. But first, go to 410-319-8888. Laurie in Northeast Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Laurie.
I don't think that the gambling or the table games is going to create any more revenue for education than the Maryland Lottery has. I can't see where the Maryland Lottery has done anything for education. And I heard someone say, well, for those persons that develop a gambling problem, we have programs in place to assist those persons. I don't think those programs would do any better than the drug treatment programs that we have in Baltimore City that have done absolutely nothing. If you want to see for yourself, look on the corner of North Avenue and Gay Street, or go to the Lexington Market one day a week and see what the Baltimore City drug programs are doing for those persons that have become addicted to drugs. And it seems to me every politician, if they want something passed, they say, oh, the children, education. But as someone said earlier, for decades they've been saying for education, and for decades education has not improved. It has not improved at all. And as far as someone saying about economic growth, sure, that's exactly what we need. And if our politicians cannot develop a strategic plan for removing something like snow, then why should I trust them with a program dealing with gambling and something that's going to affect families and the lives of the poor people in my community.
Laurie,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling. And I think you had the last word on the subject for the day. And Don Fry, I really appreciate you coming. I'm looking forward to having you on a great deal more.
My pleasure.
And Heber Brown, always good to have you in the studio. Great to see you again.
Thank you, sir, for having me.
You're not going anywhere, are you?
I'm right here with you to the end, brother.
We're about to take a break and come back and talk with the great Dr. Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize winning economist, who I'm one of those people things that wish that President Barack Obama had put him on the Council of Economic Advisors, so he might be able to snatch some sense into this Wall Street thing. We can talk to him about all that when we return from this very brief break. So stay with us and don't go away.